First Chronicles 9:1-10:14. So all Israel was listed in the genealogical records in the book of the kings of Israel. The people of Judah were exiled to Babylon because they were unfaithful to the Lord. The first of the exiles to return to their property and their former towns were priests, Levites, temple servants, and other Israelites. Some of the people from the tribes of Judah, Benjamin, Ephraim, and Manasseh came and settled in Jerusalem. One family that returned was that of Uthal, son of Amihud, son of Omri, son of Imri, son of Benai, a descendant of Perez, son of Judah. Others returned from the Shilonite clan, including Isaiah, the oldest, and his sons. From the Zerahite clan, Jeuel returned with his relatives. In all, 690 families from the tribe of Judah returned. From the tribe of Benjamin came Sulu, son of Meshulam, son of Hodaviah, son of Hesenuah, Ibniah, son of Jehoram, Elah, son of Uzi, son of Mikri, and Meshulam, son of Shephatiah, son of Reuel, son of Ibnijah. These men were all the leaders of clans, and they were listed in their genealogical records. In all, 956 families from the tribe of Benjamin returned. Among the priests who returned were Jediah, Jehorib, Jachin, Azariah, son of Hilkiah, son of Meshulam, son of Zadok, son of Merioth, son of Ahitub. Azariah was the chief officer of the house of God. Other returning priests were Adiah, son of Jehoram, son of Peshur, son of Malkajah, and Masa, son of Adel, son of Jeserah, son of Meshulam, son of Meshulamith, son of Immer. In all, 1,760 priests returned. They were heads of clans and very able men. They were responsible for ministering at the house of God. The Levites who returned were Shemaiah, son of Hashab, son of Azricam, son of Hashabiah, a descendant of Merari. Machbechar, Heresh, Galal, Mataniah, son of Micah, son of Zikri, son of Asaph, Obadiah, son of Shemaiah, son of Galal, son of Jeduthun, and Bekiah, son of Asa, son of Elkanah, who lived in the area of Netophah. The gatekeepers who returned were Salem, Akub, Talman, Ahiman, and their relatives. Shalom was the chief gatekeeper. Prior to this time, they were responsible for the king's gate on the east side. These men served as gatekeepers for the camps of the Levites. Shalom was the son of Korah, a descendant of Abiasaph, from the clan of Korah. He and his relatives, the Korahites, were responsible for guarding entrance of to the sanctuary, just as their ancestors had guarded the tabernacle in the camp of the Lord. Phinehas, son of Eleazar, had been in charge of the gatekeepers in earlier times, and the Lord had been with him. And later, Zechariah, son of Meshelemiah, was responsible for guarding the entrance to the tabernacle. In all, there were 212 gatekeepers in those days, and they were listed according to the genealogies in their villages. David and Samuel, the seer, had appointed their ancestors because they were reliable men. These gatekeepers and their descendants, by their divisions, were responsible for guarding the entrance to the house of the Lord when that house was a tent. The gatekeepers were stationed on all four sides, east, west, north, and south. Their relatives in the villages came regularly to share their duties for the 7-day periods. The four chief gatekeepers, all Levites, were trusted officials, for they were responsible for the rooms and treasuries at the house of God. They would spend the night around the house of God, since it was their duty to guard it and to open the gates every morning. some of the gatekeepers were assigned to the care for the various articles used in worship. They checked them in and out to avoid any loss. Others were responsible for the furnishings, the items in the sanctuary, and the supplies such as choice flour, wine, olive oil, frankincense, and spices. But it was the priests who blended the spices. Mattathiah, a Levite, and the oldest son of Shallum, the Korahite, was entrusted with baking the bread used in the offerings. And some members of the clan of Korah were in charge of preparing the bread to be set on the table each day, each Sabbath day. The musicians, all prominent Levites, lived at the temple. They were exempt from other responsibilities since they were on duty at all hours. All these men lived in Jerusalem. They were the heads of Levite families and were listed as prominent leaders in their genealogical records. Jehiel, the father of Gibeon, lived in the town of Gibeon. His wife's name was Micah, and his oldest son was named Abdon. Jehiel's other sons were Zur, Kish, Baal, Ner, Nadab, Gader, Ohio, Zechariah, and Mikloth. Mikloth was the father of Simeon. All these families lived near each other in Jerusalem. Ner was the father of Kish. Kish was the father of Saul. Saul was the father of Jonathan, Melchishua, Abinadab, and Asriel. Jonathan was the father of Meribbaal. Meribbaal was the father of Micah. The sons of Micah were Pithon, Melech, Terah, and Ahaz. Ahaz was the father of Jada. Jada was the father of Alameth, Azmath, and Zimri. Zimri was the father of Moza. Moza was the father of Benaiah. Benaiah's sons were Rephaiah. Rephaiah's son was Eleazar. Eleazar's son was Aziel. Aziel had six sons whose names were Azrikam, Bokhara, Ishmael, Shariah, Obadiah, and Hanan. These were the sons of Aziel. Chapter 10. Now the Philistines attacked Israel, and the men of Israel fled before them. Many were slaughtered on the slopes of Mount Gilboa. The Philistines closed in on Saul and his sons, and they killed three of his sons, Jonathan, Abinadab, and Malchishua. The fighting grew very fierce around Saul, and the Philistine army's archers caught up with him and wounded him. Saul groaned to his armor-bearer, "Take your sword and kill me before these pagans Philistines come to taunt and torture me." But his armor-bearer was afraid and would not do it, so Saul took his own sword and fell on it. When the armor-bearer realized that Saul was dead, he fell on his own sword and died. So Saul and his three sons died there together, bringing his dynasty to an end. When all the Israelites in the Jezreel Valley saw that the army had fled and that Saul and his sons were dead, they abandoned their towers and fled. So the Philistines moved in and occupied their towns. The next day, when the Philistines went out to strip the dead, they found the bodies of Saul and his sons at Mount Gilboa. So they stripped off Saul's armor, cut off his head, and they proclaimed the good news of Saul's death before their idols and to the people throughout the land of the Philistines. They placed his armor in the temple of the gods, and they fastened his head to the temple of Dagon. But when everyone in Jabesh-Gilead heard about everything the Philistines had done to Saul, all their mighty warriors brought the bodies of Saul and his sons back to Jabesh. And they buried their bones beneath the great tree of Jabesh, and they fasted for 7 days. So Saul died because he was unfaithful to the Lord. He failed to obey the Lord's command. He even consulted a medium instead of asking the Lord for guidance. So the Lord killed him, turned the kingdoms over to David, son of Jesse. Acts 27:22-24. No one had eaten for a long time. Finally, Paul called the crew together and said, "Men, you should have listened to me in the first place and not left Crete. You would have avoided all this damage and loss, but take courage. None of you will lose your lives, even though the ship will go down. For last night an angel of the God to whom I belong and whom I serve stood beside me, and he said, 'Don't be afraid, Paul, for you will surely stand trial before Caesar. What's more, God in his goodness has granted safety to everyone sailing with you. So take courage, for I believe God. It will be just as he said, but we will be shipwrecked on an island.
24.
About midnight, on the 14th night of the storm, as we were being driven across the Sea of Adria, the sailors sensed land was near. They dropped a weighted line and found that the water was 120 feet deep. With the water later, they measured again and found that it was only 90 feet deep. At this rate, they were afraid we would soon be driven against the rocks along the shore, so they threw out four anchors from the back of the ship and prayed for daylight. When the sailors tried to abandon the ship, they lowered the lifeboat as though they were going to put out anchors from the front of the ship. But Paul said to the commanding officer and soldiers, "You will all die unless the sailors stay aboard." So the soldiers cut the ropes to the lifeboat and let it drift away. But just as day was dawning, Paul urged everyone to eat. "You've been so worried that you haven't touched food for 2 weeks," he said. "Please eat something now for your own good, for not a hair of your heads will perish." He took some bread, gave thanks to God before them all, and broke off a piece and ate it. And everyone was encouraged and began to eat, all 276 of us who were aboard. After eating, the crew lightened the ship further by throwing the cargo of wheat overboard. When morning dawned, they didn't recognize the coastline, but they saw a bay with a beach and wondered if they could get to the shore by running the ship aground. So they cut off the anchors and let them in the sea. Then they lowered the rudders, raised the foresail, and headed toward shore. But they hit a shoal and ran the ship aground too soon. And both the ship stuck fast, and while the stern was repeatedly smashed by the force of the waves, it began to break apart. The soldiers wanted to kill the prisoners to make sure they didn't swim ashore and escape, but the commanding officer wanted to spare Paul, so he didn't let them carry out their plan. Then he ordered all who could swim to jump overboard first and make for land. The others held onto planks or debris from the broken ship, so everyone escaped safely to shore. Proverbs 18, 23 and 24. The poor plead for mercy, and rich answer with insults. There are friends who destroy each other, but a real friend sticks closer than a brother.